This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to Province Sports Radio. It's Wednesday, September 21st. Patrick Johnson here.
We're back.
Kenzie, we're back. We didn't do it last week, right?
No.
But we did the week before,
didn't we? We did, yeah. Okay. But I mean, Wednesdays and casual Tuesdays have been fairly empty the last couple of things really fall apart around here when you're not around.
Yeah, it's, breaks happen, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, we gave them a bit of warning. If you listen to the last Wednesday one, I think we told them maybe you would be away and I would be away. And
yeah, maybe.
Anyway. How are you doing? What's going on?
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah?
Sportsing
it up?
Yeah. There's no shortage of it these days.
You've been watching the World Cup hockey?
Yeah, I've been getting, progressively more into it.
I watched the game last night. I turned it off. It was boring. I mean, part of the problem, and it's going to be interesting going forward. Because, I guess, do people just want to watch Canada destroy everybody? Maybe that's what they want.
I mean, I don't.
I don't either.
I mean,
that's what they want.
I've been thinking about this. I was thinking about this a lot last night because I kind of came away from the game the same way that you did. During the third period when the game felt like a foregone conclusion, I had to tear myself away to go to the run to the grocery store and back quickly, but it didn't bother me at all because there was no drama to the game.
There was no drama. Yeah.
I'm not interested in watching Canada steamroll all these teams, but it's not like it was in 2002 anymore, where we felt like we had something to prove as a hockey nation on the stage of best versus best. I mean, even in 2004, that World Cup, it was more like an affirmation of that Olympic gold that Canada had just won 2 years previously, that had been such a long time coming. So now, I mean, we're getting into, we're since what 2002, it seems like every best on best except for Torino has gone Canada's way, so it's this one doesn't seem like it's going to trend any differently.
There was tension in 2010 though, like
there was for sure,
and it's so fascinating for me. There's been so much debate about the American team. Dave Lozo's story for Vice yesterday was
fantastic.
I know he's not always been everyone's cup of tea, but that was great writing. I mean, it was a brilliant premise, and he told it so well. And it's when he listed the guys that weren't there, and literally because it was just, we think this is what wins hockey. And it's such a reminder to me of how poorly people in general understand what happened, period, about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And there are facts we can see, there's certain things we know, and maybe it's partly that because hockey's still, we're still so enthralled with the emotion and the romance and the narrative that we have such a hard time separating ourselves. The Don Cherry approach, which is we win because we wear suits, and things like that, and not actually having serious analysis. And it's something I touched on a little bit when I wrote about the Panthers hiring Reese Jessup, for instance, another Canucks Army guy.
Mm-hmm.
And it hit me while I was putting that story together, is that the movement in sports, towards or away from kind of the old methods, whether it be hockey, whether it be baseball, it's not just about like stats and numbers. It's about business people. It's about understanding how you make effective decisions that will be beneficial to the survival of your organization.
Mm-hmm.
And especially if you look at the Panthers front office, all those guys have had an obvious interest in stats and whatnot, but the guys that actually work for the team, as opposed to the guys consult, the Canucks Army guys who all live and work in British Columbia, the guys in charge, the assistant GMs both come from the business world, really. And so that's the thing that's kind of interesting, that they're the ones who get it. So we look at the way that Team USA was run, and it's not about X's and O's. Yes, it is, Torts. I'm sorry. You can't just say we're going to try harder. That doesn't work. If you're playing to win, as Canada clearly is, and Mike Babcock, in the end, the other thing I thought about, he picked a team just to win. He didn't care about making sure he had a penalty killer.
Well, sure. I mean, you're not going to go matchup with Canada one-to-one on skill alone. But you need to, you also can't think that you can just negate the skill that Canada's going to throw at you with grittiness. That's just not, I mean, they might be opposing ideologies, but that doesn't mean that one negates the other. And that seemed to be the approach that Team USA took here. And I mean, how embarrassing was it for that Phil Kessel tweet?
That was amazing.
I mean, it just summed up their tournament so well. How poorly thought out their approach to this tournament was.
The tournament itself, again, I mean, it was interesting. I was trying to explain to Candace, sort of, she goes, what is this? You know, why are we watching hockey in September? And, you know, have they had the World Cup before? How come I've never heard of this before, kind of thing? And I sort of explained the sort of brief history, which of course is directly tied to the economic health of the NHL.
Yes.
And also tried to give her some of the backstory, which was the Canada Cup, which was built out of a really competitive notion, which is that, you know, Canada can't put its best team in the Olympics. The Russians can. We played the 72 series. Wouldn't it be cool if we had an actual tournament? Let's get everybody involved. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the nostalgia for the Canada Cup is correct. You know, that's one of those ones where, yes, it was awesome and it was great, reasoning behind it. And then even the 96 World Cup, which, you know, we hadn't had Olympic hockey yet. It stands alone. It was a great event. You know, that's the team the Americans have been compared to. It was a great tournament. And I remember, you know, maybe it was because I was a kid. I mean, you know, you learn about doing other things, but I was enthralled.
For me, that was, right? As a kid, that was my first real taste of best-on-best international hockey. I may have some memories of, like, Lindros in the Olympics and stuff like that.
But yeah, but that still that, wasn't best-on-best. Best. Like, I remember that. And it was fun, and there was, like, go Canada, go. But you also knew that it was the Canadian team were kind of underdogs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because especially in 94, you know, the Swedes had some guy named Forsberg. But 96, you know, that was such an incredible tournament. I don't know if you can ever find that magic again. I mean, this event, I think I've been pretty cynical about, but people, why? I mean, this is the thing, as I was talking before, we went on air, that the, ratings are out. Number one watched sporting event in Canada in the last week was Saturday night's Canada game.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't think that's much of a surprise. I mean, you put the best hockey team Canada can assemble and put them on Saturday night. People are going to watch. I mean, even though not all the games are quite well attended. I mean, I don't know why they were expecting people to show up at like 3:00 on a Monday to games at the Air Canada Center. But anyway, I mean, people will watch if Canada is icing their best team.
That's the one that, I mean, I kind of have joked out loud. Oh, so we are doing this, you know, like, cause that's how they do it in other World Cups, and that you just have to be realistic. There's just so many teams, but I mean, you only have 8 teams. But I guess if you're playing all the games in basically one spot, that's what you got to do.
And I guess if you have some, like, if you have a noon Pacific start here for some of the European nations, that actually gives them a chance to watch their teams in their prime time.
Yeah, this is absolutely true. And that's, you know, that is something that, I mean, that is one of those ones where I remember watching, I think it was, you know, in 96, I think there was a Finland-Sweden game, because I think the games were in, if I'm not mistaken, in Stockholm and in Helsinki. There was a game at, you know, like 9 in the morning, because it was, you know, hockey time in Stockholm.
Right.
And I remember it being quite a, you know, it was a Finland, I think it was Finland-Sweden. It was a fantastic game. And, you know, Matt Sundin in his prime. And that undoubtedly is a factor, I'm sure. Because, yeah, I don't know how the money is worked over there, or, you know, TV contracts, that kind of thing. Because, I mean, in the end, it was quite funny. Did you catch Jim Houston at one point? He said, oh, yeah, it's being reviewed by the league. And I'm like, this is the World Cup, Jim. There is no league. But I understood what he meant.
This tournament, though, too, I mean, it was obvious, like, they set it up for a Canada-US final, which they're not going to get.
Yeah, and that to me, is there a possibility for intrigue from what you've seen? I'm not sure. I know that, like, for instance, to talk about the ratings, I think it was Canada won I think it was Friday's Blue Jays game was the second most watched thing, and then the third was the Team North America game on Sunday, which, you know, in a way, I guess there's Americans on the team, it's kind of being seen as like Canada B.
Yeah.
So, you know, not surprisingly, there's some interest in that.
It's funny because, like, we all kind of made fun of the two teams that they just invented for this tournament, but they've been kind of the breath of fresh air for this whole thing as well.
Well, how great is it that has been pointed out in many circles, Ralf Krüger, the coach of Team Europe, who, you know, has done a great job, basically just runs a soccer team now. Yeah. He's not even a hockey coach anymore. I think that's pretty great.
Yeah. It's they've been interesting to watch. I mean, the kids have been fun to watch. I've been beating that drum for a year that they were going to be a lot of fun to watch, but I didn't expect them to be as competitive as they have. I mean, we kind of expected that they might lose some games like 8-5. You know, they've been a lot of fun to watch.
8-5 maybe seems excessive given that all the goalies are pretty good.
Yeah, that's fair enough. But you know, we didn't really think that I don't think anyone would have batted an eye if they had gone 0-3 in this tournament and just, you know, had some nice plays along the way.
The other thing that surprised me was that, well, I mean, I'd be curious if, I don't know if they ever do, because I don't think they do, but it would be interesting to see how the regional breakdown works on the broadcast. Are there people out here watching? I kind of assume so, given that number. You kind of have to have people everywhere. But having the games, like, there's no other presence in Vancouver otherwise than it's on TV. You know, there's no fan zone.
Right.
You know, there's none of the stuff that I think we usually associate now with World Cups, that there's, you know, there's a event for people just to hang out.
Yeah.
You know, that certainly was Rugby World Cup was a year ago. They had that. The Women's World Cup, a year ago they had that. You know, my experience with that is that that's what they do. But the hockey one, I mean, I guess they have a fan zone in Toronto, which I believe I've been seeing that's been kind of panned because it's kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
But again, that's not necessarily on them. That's on the fact that Toronto, it's so hard to get around because even though they complain about the traffic, they don't seem to do anything else, like build transit or things like that. But anyway, in the end, though, do you think that there is a chance of there really being any intrigue at this point? Because the Americans are out. I mean, the Russians, I suppose, could pull themselves together. Swedes, maybe. I don't know. You tell me.
It's just going to have to be. It's going to have to be someone. I think making it. It's going to be having someone is going to have to push Canada, whether that means taking a game off of them in the best of three final. Or
this is how little I know. It's a best of three.
I am pretty sure it's a best of three.
Because that's what they've done in the past. So,
yes.
What happens? Do they play game three if Canada wins 2-0? Do they play game three?
I don't think so. Why would they?
I don't know. For fun? For the spectacle.
It's someone's gonna have to push Canada, and we haven't seen that from anyone yet. I mean, that game was over last night in about, you know, by after 20 minutes.
Yeah. By the time I turned it on, I mean, it was 3-1 by the time I turned it on, and I saw did they end up giving it to Bergeron or Tavares, the goal that hit feet and went in the net?
I think it went to Bergeron.
Because it hit his foot.
But I'm not sure. I thought it was
I was kind of surprised by that one. I mean, I feel like if this were the NHL, they would have said, nope, Bergeron took out the goalie, no goal. Maybe I'm crazy. I mean, I know he was pushed, but he went there.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't have a problem with
it. I didn't really care. I just was kind of surprised. I mean, that's, again, cynical me. Interesting note, Chris Elkovich, who writes about TV sports ratings for Yahoo, noting that, as I've said, the hockey, people love hockey. They'll watch hockey. It's clearly the calculus that Sportsnet has made in this aspect, and has Sportsnet got it right, unlike their approach in recent years to the NHL, which is that there is too much of a good thing. That people are turned out, at least for Canada anyway. You know, it'll be interesting to see next week's version of it and see how the other games play out and see if there's any decline now that Canada seems to be in the driver's seat. But also noted that that viewership bled from the Blue Jays, who have been, you know, a very strong weekend presence for well more than a year now, and also from the CFL. And yes. I guess the NFL to a certain degree.
I wonder almost if the World Cup audiences benefited a little bit from a Blue Jays swoon heading into that tournament as well, into the weekend.
West Coast trip, you know, they were playing in LA over the weekend. You know, that's not the easiest thing for late night viewing back east. I mean, want it. I mean, those games start at 10 p.m. or 10:30 in Toronto. So, the Seattle series is the thing that's going to interest me actually with the Blue Jays in Seattle this week. Is that there are so many people from Western Canada who probably watch those games on TV that will be in Seattle not watching on TV.
Yeah.
And those games are late. So it's actually going to be interesting to see how that all plays out, because I'm sure that will be a factor.
Yeah, but man, does it ever look like a home game for the Jays at Safeco? Like,
oh, unbelievable!
Yeah,
wow. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I obviously wasn't able to go this year, but I wrote a bit about it and have gone in past years. And my friend texted me last night. He said, man, you know, they're still, you know, as everyone seems to have noticed, yeah, it's still welcoming. But, man, I don't think the Mariners fans even turned out. I mean, you could see some people on TV, but it was just a sea of blue.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, there are some very passionate Mariners fans out there who are like, why the hell don't they cheer for the local team? And I said, because people cheer for winners. That's reality. You know, it's just as people like doing the wave. I don't personally have a really care much for the wave, but I don't get why people get so upset about the wave. I don't. It's people cheering.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I find it less appropriate in the middle of, like, while play is going on in hockey game than baseball game where yeah.
I know generally it's that drunk guy we hate, but I know you hate the wave.
I'm not a huge fan.
I know you hate the wave. I know. And the thing I find funny has been seeing sort of Vancouver sports tweeters saying, oh, we know Vancouver's in town. I'm like, no, this is something people complain about in Toronto. I know people that go, God damn it, stop doing the wave.
This is not a Vancouver-specific problem.
This is not a Vancouver-specific problem. It, British sportscasters, oh, there goes the Mexican wave. It's over now. And you're like, really? Who cares? I don't care. It's people cheering in an unconventional way. Blame Seattle. Yeah.
Did they do that? You were at CenturyLink for the...
Sounders. Yes. No wave. Like at a Whitecaps. Because, I mean, that I've seen people try to start waves at the Whitecaps. But, of course, the Southsiders are all standing. So it kind of dies. And they always look frustrated. Like, why didn't that work? And then, yeah, there was no wave at CenturyLink. CenturyLink is... I've never been there before. Lovely stadium. The spot that they actually put the traveling Whitecaps fans up in that corner there is actually a great spot to watch the game from because you're high up and you can see everything happen.
Oh, okay.
You can see that Eric Hurtado had every corner of the net to shoot at, and yet he shot it at the goalie. Things like that. I feel really bad for Eric Hurtado. He seems like a really nice kid. And he's being asked to do something he clearly is not ready and, for, good enough for.
Yeah.
You know, he's had, you know, that's now the story of the late season is that they couldn't even score when they got the chance. So, but yeah, CenturyLink, great venue. Obviously, it's a modern stadium, easy to get in and out of. That was, by the way, one of my little observations about Rogers Center, the Sky Dome, as I keep calling it, is that everything's a bit narrow. The aisles are narrow, yes. And the seats are narrow, and the concourse is narrow.
Yes.
And it takes a while to get in and out. Even BC Place is easier to get out of than Rogers Center, I think.
Hmm. Yeah, I'd agree.
Right, just doors. For some reason, Rogers Center's like lacking in doors.
Yeah.
I don't quite get that. But Safeco is slower as well. So it's like, I mean, Safeco and Rogers Center were both built without the ridiculous modern security theater in mind with, you know, endless checks and endless metal detectors and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I guess at a certain level, I get it. But like... Isn't having a whole bunch of people milling around outside a stadium now a nice, you know, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Anyway, but CenturyLink, yeah, I liked it. It was great, you know, and you know, we obviously everybody knows about Pioneer Square and all the bars around there. So we had a couple beers across the street and went in and had a, what did we have? There was a food truck. We had pulled pork. It was pretty good.
Very nice. So, I mean, how would you compare the atmosphere to a... To a Whitecaps game.
Well, it's different. I mean, part of the problem is, of course, the Sounders have been crap this year.
That's true.
They still had a big crowd. The 47, I don't think there were 47,000 people there. That was the announced crowd. I don't think there were actually that many people in the stadium. It still was a big crowd.
Yeah.
I mean, they still have a ton of season ticket holders. You know, because what does that stadium hold? 65, something like that?
I think so. I think it's over 60 for sure.
So, you know, was it 2/3 full? It's tough to tell because there were a lot of empty seats in amongst the people down below.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We did, you know, you're up with the Whitecaps fans, so you're making Whitecaps style noise, songs that people know and that kind of thing. And then down, you know, obviously at the other end is the Sounders, you know, the Sounders fans, and they're doing their thing. So, you know, never having been at the other end from, I my tickets at BC Place are in the South Side, so I don't know what it actually sounds like away from the South Side. So I can't really compare. I couldn't really tell you. I mean, I've been told people love it. They say it's great. So... Similar. I mean, the crowd's obviously twice the size.
Yeah.
Basically. So, yeah, it was good. And then, you know, Safeco, man. It's great. It was not the most exciting game. I mean, I generally enjoy pitcher's duels, but, It was a 3-2 win for the – or 3-3 – no, 2-0 win for the Astros. 2-1 win. 2-1 win for the Astros. And, you know, it wasn't really that exciting. Not a lot happened. There wasn't really any controversy. There's no yelling. There certainly wasn't a Puig versus Bumgarner.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, so
– I find it interesting you were down there the same time Ed Willis was. Well, I guess he's still down
there. No, overlapped. Because he actually came down on – I think he actually went down on Monday.
Okay.
I was there. He did some advanced stuff, but he didn't go down until Monday because he's covering the games, the three games.
Right.
I'm not mistaken.
But I did find his piece from the last couple of days about just kind of comparing Seattle and Vancouver as
sports towns. That was for Sunday. It's an interesting thing to think about. I mean, obviously, even if you take away the college thing, you know, he makes a strong point. There were a lot of people at sports on one day. I hadn't even thought about it. There were 100,000 people watching sports in Seattle. Could you get that in Vancouver?
I don't think so.
And I don't know. I mean, the number that the T-Birds put in for their football game on Saturday night was impressive for the T-Birds.
I would say, yeah, there was.
Right? You know, 7,500 people. Like, I mean, you know, that doesn't happen very often. It helps when the team wins, I think, is a lot of it. I would say, in general, UBC Athletics has gotten better at selling itself as an event. But... And I think it's that event thing. I think that there's so few. I mean, it helps. College football is such a big thing in the U.S. So UW only has so many games. There's the tailgate aspect. There's the kind of event aspect, you know, which is something that the NFL does so well. Again, like, that's my biggest thing. I think I just don't understand why the Lions don't do that. I think they need to make their games more of an event. I think that's part of the reason why they're struggling for crowds. Is that as improved the on-field product might be, there's still a stigma to watching a Lions game. I mean, it's also the competing with TV. It's more, you know, the beer's cheaper from your couch.
Yeah, it's true. And I wrote about this a little bit in my column last week about also just the affordability challenge of the city. And as people have to move further away from the city center, it becomes more and more difficult to make your way back into the city to get to a game. And...
We're more of an ordeal, no matter whether you're driving or you're taking.
It's more of an, it's a larger investment of time and money that people seem to have less and less of at their disposal these days, which is unfortunate just because there is a good product on the field these days. But it is difficult. Like, how do you make it more of an event at a stadium like BC Place? I mean, it's not really conducive to tailgating, for one.
No, but there's ways to, there's just, you get creative, you know, like just. What do you have? How do you get people here? How do you make an event happen? I mean, you know, obviously Terry Fox Plaza is not an enormous place, but there's space to do stuff. You know, there's it doesn't help that next door is a construction site, of course. There's space on the concourse.
Yeah.
You know, it's getting as creative as possible. And I just don't feel like they're as creative as they could be. And it's not, you know, it's just make it a thing to, you know, that people enjoy. Because I think in the end, the other thing is that you need to feel a presence, right? I mean, do you ever feel like a presence in the city? I mean, the Canucks for so long, because they've been sitting next to a transit line and next to sort of a major in and out route into downtown, you know, they put banners up. You knew it was the Canucks. You're like, right, the Canucks.
Mm-hmm.
That's common. It's exciting. Maybe not this year. The Lions maybe suffer from that because there are the stadium over there. I mean, they tried the banner, you know, Real Football Starts, whatever. But how many people actually see that banner? You know, and how many people connected with that and that and say, oh, yeah, that's really fun. It's a complicated challenge. And they still got work to do. Because it's just like, in the end, it's not just, unfortunately, it's not just about the game, but it should be, but it's not.
Yeah.
And as we've said so many times on this podcast with Steve, Canadians are your lesson. You know, Canada, the Sevens are your lesson. Make it a party. Get people excited. I mean, the Canada Sevens are going to sell out. They have, I think, when the general ticket sales went on sale yesterday, and I didn't check and find out how they went, but going into that, there were just 5,500 weekend passes left out of 33.
Wow, that's right? Pretty impressive. Yeah.
You know, and it's 6 months away.
Yeah.
And it's obviously a standalone event, and that helps, but there's an energy there. People had a really good time last year. And I know they themselves are starting to look at how do we do more events around And they still, I think they're very early on in terms of what they might actually do, but it's something that they want to make sure that it's a thing, because, you know, they want to channel that Olympics thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the other thing with the Lions, I would say, is that tickets, they start at $35. Like, what's the rationale? It's twice as much as a Whitecaps ticket as you could get, realistically.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at what other teams around the league are pricing their tickets at, it's pretty comparable.
Yeah, but in the end, they don't have the same kind of loyalty of fan. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, you can do that in Calgary and Edmonton and Saskatchewan and Winnipeg, because that's the big game in town. And this isn't the only game in town. And you look at the teams which are struggling the most, and the teams are the ones that are struggling the most are the Lions and the Argonauts and, to a certain degree, the Alouettes, because there's other things to do.
I've seen arguments like, well, why don't you just open the upper bowl back up and sell like $10 seats up there? But I feel like that could make it feel even more cavernous in there at time if the tickets don't sell.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the solution. I mean, I look at, you know, you look at the seats here, and you know, it's $90 to sit on the sideline,
mm-hmm.
the last row on the sideline, and like I'm not going to spend $90. I'm going to sit at home and I'm going to drink my beer and watch the game on TV. And I think more than anything, that's something to consider.
Yeah.
And I it's something that college football's had to deal with and NFL's had to deal with to a certain degree. And, you know, if you're going to be big league, you have to think big league instead of just saying, oh, well, if the game weren't on TV, more people would come. I don't also think that would solve any problems.
No.
Because I know I've seen some mention of that. Going back to the, I don't get it.
No, I think you need to have the national presence the way that they have.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one thing they've got, right?
Yeah.
Their TV product. You know, they crush soccer. Soccer hasn't been able to connect with the fact there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of kids that play soccer in this country. But for whatever reason, I mean, TSN's not going to rebid on the new contract. I've heard it might be the CBC.
On MLS.
Yeah.
Really?
Well,
I thought CBC was out of the
who else is
sports
gonna be?
Betting game. I don't know. Sportsnet is not going to pick it up, I guess, either.
I mean, to me, it's one of those ones that all of a sudden becoming a cut rate product. You know, I mean, you look at, like, how does rugby gets on TV? Because they pay the production cost. They've managed to figure out a way to make that work, but it's not, you know, nobody makes any money off of it.
Yeah.
You make money off hockey, you make some money off football, I guess, and I guess you make money off baseball. Yeah. You know, soccer's not proved to be much of a programming. I mean, I think partly because it's expensive. And that's why TSN's kind of cut back from what they were doing from before. So
it's not a product that you can, I would imagine it's not a product that you can kind of recoup some of your cost on as well either, when you have no commercial breaks throughout almost the entirety of the match.
I've got to think that's a huge challenge. Yeah. Absolutely. You get a presenting sponsor maybe, but I mean, I think the thing too is that, you know, you look at the way the English Premier League, which is one of the world's great leagues, has made it work, is that they have sell-on rights. I mean, there's an actual rights competition to get their rights in other countries. And that's how they kind of got around the advertising thing, mm-hmm. is because they just sell their rights. They know there's a hot product there, and they say, you guys figure out the advertising problem because it's not ours. Yeah, I think it's a great point. It's so different from how the other sports are structured. We'll see how it goes. I mean, yeah, I don't know. What else we got this week? I think we've run out of the list I had in my head.
Oh, I don't know. You did mention, I did want you to tell me why you got mad at Buck Martinez.
Oh, and, God.
Tabler last
So,
night.
Yeah, you asked me, how long did you watch the game for? So I watched it till it was 8-2. It was great. You know, but I was getting tired. It was 9 o'clock or 9:30 or something. And they were talking about Jay Happ, him and Tabby. And they started talking about how Happ had come back to the Jays, and it was all this kind of, oh, he had a great relationship with Pete Walker and this stuff. And I'm going, no, the Blue Jays signed him because he had become a massively better pitcher. And why did he become a massively better pitcher? Because he went to the Pittsburgh Pirates, who had the best pitching like coaches in baseball. They didn't even mention that he had been in Pittsburgh. As they started telling this narrative that just didn't really have any connection to reality. And they literally never mentioned Pittsburgh. It was like he'd gone to Seattle, kind of worked in Seattle. They actually showed a graphic showing his ERA by year, and then how last year and this year are like category, they're like a run better. And they didn't delve into why. They all kind of said, well, you know, he got better at his curveball. How did he get better? I was just losing my mind. I tried watching it with no sound. That's how annoyed I was. And I try not. I know it's hard, but sometimes they just drive me bananas. Yeah. And I'm like, guys, I'm sorry. I got to go.
I don't think that those guys are the... I don't think you're the only one that gets driven bananas from time to time by those two, but...
People like them. They're friendly. They're nice. The guy, Tom Chit, who I mentioned, the guy I know who I wrote about in my story for Monday's paper, Tom tells this wonderful story about walking home from the stadium or walking back to their hotel from the stadium last year, and Buck happened to be walking along with him. So they talked to him and they said Buck was great and he just wanted to talk baseball. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And I get it. It seems like he's a pretty friendly guy. He gets it. He's been doing this for a long time. But man, I could not believe it. I'm like, you guys, what are you doing? You're making up a narrative that didn't even need to be made up. I know you hate stats. But then they were throwing out numbers. They were actually using stats. It was great. They were talking about fastball like percentages and stuff. Actual like data. It was amazing. They absolutely hate sabermetrics.
That's a big step for them.
It was a huge step. I was like, good for you guys. And then they turned around. Here's my rant. Then they turned around and they just started telling some story that had no connection to reality. Other than, I guess, maybe he likes Pete Walker. But I'm like, pretty sure that's not why. And he also offered a lot of money. And maybe he likes living in Canada. I don't know. Josh Donaldson says he loves Toronto. That's all I know.
And, well, Toronto loves Josh Donaldson. I'm sure that doesn't hurt.
So, yeah. So did you watch the game last night?
I did. I watched a good chunk of it, yeah. And like almost, I kind of tuned in just as that fourth inning was starting.
Wasn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Candace goes, has this happened before? I'm like, oh, yeah. We actually looked it up. Most runs in the modern era. Do you know?
By a Jays team?
No, and just in general.
In a major league game.
I totally forgotten about this one. And do you know why? Because I don't remember tweeting about it because I wasn't on Twitter yet.
Wait, so would it just most runs in an inning or most...
Most runs in a game.
In a game? Like combined or one team?
One team.
Well, I guess it's going to be high 20s, I'm going to guess.
Texas at Baltimore, game one, August 22nd, 2007. They scored 30 runs. I'd forgotten about that.
Wow.
It was just one of those ones you kept. I remember, I think it was actually on TV for some reason. Or maybe I had MLB TV. Then I think I had MLB. Anyway, it just was insane. Like they just kept scoring runs. I need to find the box score. That was the most runs. Actually, no. So it was interesting because there were three games in the knots that where they scored more than 25 runs. There's Boston against Florida in 2003. They scored 25. Kansas City versus Detroit 2004. But the 2003 game was the most runs scored in a game since 1955. No, since 96. Oh, no, that's right. So there's 96 and then 55. So it was just like one of these ones where it's almost never happened. And then bang, bang, not like bang, bang, bang. But
you'd think, though, with like the quality of players and pitchers and everything, that would be less and less like possible.
Did they have all the position players pitch, Anyway, it was good. It's good to see the Jays get it back on track. Obviously, it'd be nice to see the Mariners get into. I have, I do have a small soft spot for the Mariners, but Jays are my team.
Yeah, the Mariners look to be a little far out now at this point.
Such a weird team. Good, but not great. And saw a story this morning. I didn't even read it, but someone's like, how the Mariners wasted Felix Hernandez's career, basically. And you're like, that's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
And somebody else pointed out to me, he's like, do you remember when the Mariners had Cliff Lee? And I went, what? They did.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, they picked him up and had him for like half a season, and they traded him either to Texas or to Philly. I can't remember now. But yeah. What? Yeah, because they were sort of half going for it. And then they had all these non, really not very good guys playing like the corners.
Half going for it.
How do you like that? Yeah, it's half measures. Maybe we'll go for it. Maybe we won't. What are you writing about this week?
Well, I started scratching out a bit of a column last night about how boring it's becoming to watch Canada dominate these tournaments, but then kind of realized that they also are playing again tonight. So I don't know. We'll have to see what I can put together for.
Well, the game tonight doesn't really. Matter. Is it premised on the fact they have to dominate tonight?
If they lay an egg against Team Europe, then it kind of throws my column
for a loop.
Well,
they have nothing to play for. They're already in the semifinals.
So then I look kind of silly in the Thursday morning paper after they've been beaten up by a team of eight nations combined.
What's your deadline for something like that, by the way? Do you have to wait till, can you wait till the game's over?
It's tough. Like, we have a pretty, probably not, like, we have a pretty early press deadline compared to most newspapers.
And
so,
sometimes,
and you know, usually I'm like, you know, I'm busy putting together like news stories during the afternoon. So
can I chase my column?
Yeah. So it's kind of tough. Like, it's been really frustrating this week. There's been so much hockey on during the day.
Right.
There's been Young Stars. There's been World Cup. And I'm like, I've been writing about housing. So like, it's been, I haven't been able to watch any of it. It's been super frustrating when there's that much daytime hockey. Cause, you know, that used to be my jam. I just be, if there was hockey on during the day, I mean, I was getting paid.
Don't you have an iPad at your desk?
No, I don't. What, like, how would you think that we get? Do you have an iPad at your desk on top of your like massive desktop?
Yeah, haven't you noticed how much crap we have? I mean, it's an old iPad.
No, I don't. They don't outfit us with all the good stuff like they do here at the
mobile editor. That's why they gave it to me.
Right.
So. No, you put it there. Can you have an iPad Mini for like $150? Just sit on the side of your desk. Then you got a little. You know, you're just doing research.
I'll look into it.
You're just doing research. Yeah, I don't know. That's my tip. I mean, and the other thing, amazingly, Fido out of nowhere decided to give me an extra gig of data.
Well, thanks, Fido.
I was like, thanks, guys. That's nice. Because I think they noticed I kept going over. They're like, here you go. And they must be doing it for everybody. I haven't streamed anything with it yet. But I don't know. Is that enough to stream? How much do you need? Have you streamed off 3G or LTE or anything?
I think they say like when... I think NHL Game Center, they would tell you that you need about a gig of data to stream a game start to finish on cellular.
Okay. So I can like have little moments if I'm desperate and I'm standing at the bus stop and I need to see 5 minutes of.
Oh yeah. I've run over my data cap lots like during Canucks season when especially like if they're out on an Eastern road swing and like my news shift finishes at like, you know, like after the game has started, like I'll watch it on the train and it racks up the data pretty quick. I did the same thing during the Olympics too. I was watching a lot of stuff on the train and I exceeded my data cap pretty quick.
Obviously, I just need to invite you over more often since I live up the hill from your office.
I guess so.
All right. We'll make that. We'll see if that happens.
All right.
We'll do a live podcast.
Okay.
All right, folks. He's at Eric McKenzie on Twitter. I'm at Rising Action. You can find us, of course, all our podcasts, provincewars.com/radio. We're on iTunes. Just search for Province Sports. Give us a rating and reviewing. It helps us bump up the list. Even if you find our conversation really boring, please tell us that.
We did ramble on about a lot of stuff today, didn't we?
There was a lot of things. Yeah. A lot of rambling by me.
Yeah.
I feel bad about that.
That's okay. We've been off for a week, so it's
true. Yeah, it's true. We're on Stitcher. We're on TuneIn. I think that's it. Is that everything that I usually... That's usually everything I say.
I think so.
All right, Eric, we'll see you next week.
Yeah, you bet.